Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo. You've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
We're missing what the show. Then we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Morning, lads. How we doing?
Good. How are you?
How are you all? It's a lovely day out there today, isn't it? Sorry, Ken. We've all been there, Ken. We've Ken Hogan with us, lads.
Great day to make my championship debut, Dalo. Thanks very much for that.
I know. Well, like, you got the invitation, I suppose, around Wednesday or Thursday, like, so. Yeah. And we don't often meet Ian Turles in, that's two in a row now, beating Ian Turles in the championship. Like, it's heady times, like, for Clare people.
You have to take the good with the bad and the rough with the smooth, and yesterday was a real eye-opener for us all, I think, you know.
Yeah. It certainly was, Ken, I suppose, following on the week before as well. I kind of was delighted. A lot of Clare people were a bit scared with the way the Waterford tip match went. You know, but I was kind of delighted in that it put our fellas, I think, on full alert. Like, you know, that tip were coming with something new and something different. I think our fellas really were tuned in. Like,
yeah, big time. And you mentioned before in your preview of the match that, you know, if your forwards fire, you have a great chance of winning, and that's the way it transpired as well, the way it is set up brilliantly. I mean, Sean Tracy's knowledge of the Killadangan set up, I think, bore fruition as well, which with 2 metre Peter going in on James Quigley, you know, it was a huge fillip for Clare in the fact that Peter Duggan was so effective in there. And then you had Shane O'Donnell and Ian Galvin sniping around the place. And of course, The biggest dread of all for us was the Tony Kelly situation. Tony, I think, without playing well, he actually played a stormer, because he just ventured out into the middle of the field. Seamus Kennedy followed him, and it left wide open gaps at the back for Clare to exploit.
Yeah, and it's one of those mornings that we all remember, the four of us, you know, morning after championship. I suppose the only thing you have is, you have hope, you have 2 games, I suppose, and you have to go at it. How are you doing, TJ? You're looking down on everyone there, just smirking away, and everything's kosher with you.
Early days, Dillo. Good weekend again. Limerick won, Liverpool won. We had no winner on the old GGs as well, and we have more to come, and Punchestown coming this week. The sun is shining, lots of positives. Few injuries, which would be the only thing that'll bring us down. You'd have to say, yes, good position and happy the way things are standing.
That's the stuff. Mr. Landers, we have to thank you publicly. Now, Larry was kind of on a day's holidays and the show didn't go up very early, like, but Lord Larry, what a call.
What a call. Oh,
and you were in Kilkenny all, Mark, and you never caught the Murtys for a pint, like?
Well, the time I was passing, there was no lights on there, and there was no lights on there coming home, either, I can tell you.
Well, the second part is down to yourself now. The first part, I wouldn't be open that early in the Wednesday, no, like.
Well, I must say, we were treated to a fantastic evening in Kilkee. A good friend of mine, Pat Blake, owned the horse. He was a bit hoarse at that stage. I said, Pat, is a bit like an All-Ireland final week now. I said, the cup is here, the supporters are here. You're showing a rerun on the television, and every time they jumped the fence, the cheers were getting louder and louder. So, it was a fantastic call, I must say. And but obviously, with the new shiny jacket you had last night in the Sunday game, I'd say you had a few quid on her. But I was talking to a fella yesterday, and he says, whatever you do, say it to Dela. He's had a great weekend, because he said he spread the gospel in Kerry, day one over the weekend. Then he went to the Limerick, to the academy. They had a big win over the weekend. Then they went on to the Dubs, and he spread the gospel there as well, and they had a win. And then he said, finally, finishing off, the Pat Fitzgerald and Davy Fitz wrote the gospel in Clare, but Dalo was the man to lift the cup. You finish it off with the accumulator, the four timer over the weekend for Dalo. So I said to myself, you must have went into the pocket to get a new jacket last night for the Sunday game, kid.
No, I'll have to thank Stephen O'Gorman and all in Patrick Burke's menswear in Ennis for kicking me up. I'll have to get a black t-shirt off for next week and a pair of jeans and a pair of runners.
I see. And you left the young flea use the gizmo then as well, like.
Well, like, it's all his idea as far as I'm concerned. Like, you know, it's great as well. Like, you know, he was quite happy to have a go at it. So I said, go on. And I suppose you're picking out a couple of bits then that you could edit. You highlight the other Burns there. No, I think this is a savage piece of analysis here on Burnsy and the transition to attack if it's possible, you know. So, but I was happy to let him do the circles and the lights.
Do you know what? No, I was actually waiting for you to say, roll it there, Roisin, will you?
Jesus, I tell you, anyway. Wesley, well done. Wesley was a bit sour at me, I'd say, for giving out about Derek last week about the gizmo.
In fairness to you, you bought the Kilkey Sub Aqua board, which as well, I see that in your hand as well. Jesus, I tell you, that board is after seeing a lot of venues this year now.
Tis. Landers, that's about your first time staying up to watch the Sunday game, I say, in about 2 years.
He was falling, I think, Dillo. He was falling.
Were you falling, Mac?
Yeah, I had a Philly fall last night, yeah. We didn't get a whole pile of sleep now. And we had to head to Nace now this afternoon, myself and the farm manager, Mr. Sean Hannity. We're heading off to Nace because we've got a runner. We're taking on the big boys again tonight in Nace, Aidan O'Brien and Joseph and Willie McCreary. So the Inchiquin maid is making her second outing in a maiden tonight. So I don't know whether I'd be having a few quid now, to be honest with you, but I'm just hoping that she could do herself justice. She ran fierce well in the maiden 13 days ago. And Joseph, I'm under the impression, sold the second horse for significant money during the week. So if we got place tonight, Dela, you mightn't see me for a couple of weeks, kid.
Jesus, I tell you one thing, Ken. Joining the guards or joining the bank like I did, like, was a bad move on the, like, your man.
Oh,
like,
sure. These entrepreneurs, I tell you, they're unbelievable.
Ken, we'll start, I suppose we'll start in the Gaelic grounds, I suppose, the clash of the All-Ireland champions and the National League champions. And, like, is there any way of stopping this crowd? Like, they're down the three boys that are injured and the hurler of the year goes off carrying a hamstring, and yet they kind of breeze into a 7 points lead after scoring 9 points to one. I know they did concede two goals, but they still went away and got the last 2 points. But I don't know. I'm beginning to wonder, are they just a bit like the Kilkenny rain? Can they nearly have you beaten now before you go out? Like,
yeah, how many consecutive championship games is that now that they have won? I think 11 or 12 consecutive championship games without defeat. So, outstanding game, to tell you the truth, lads. I thought the hurling was top class. The hits were brilliant. Garrod got his customary yellow very early, 3 or 4 minutes. But, like, you have to say that he was tackling savagely. He was hit himself. You know, he gives it and takes it. But he set down the marker for the whole game in the way the game transpired. Like, Waterford did a lot of hurling, you know, in the first half. They had the benefit of that strong breeze. But out of nowhere, Limerick just railed them in, kept clipping over pints left, right and centre. We talk about goals winning matches. And, of course, yesterday, you know, it was a total difference there from that point of view. But I felt Aaron Gillan's ball winning ability was unbelievable. Like, we talk about setups and matches and systems of play and playing through the lines. But, you know, Dermot Burns won a ball and just launched it. He didn't have to pick out anybody. And Gillan is capable of winning the ball, you know, turning on a sixpence, heading for goals. He's either hauled down or he gets a score. And I suppose that's where the other teams are lacking a small bit. Kilkenny had that in abundance, the Owen Larkins of this world, the Richie Powers of this world, who could win hard ball, Big Walter in his heyday. But the other teams are lacking that in a big way. The Tom Morrisseys, the Gerard Hegartys, Cian Lynch's, Will O'Donoghue's, that work rate is savage. But inside, to have full forwards inside that can win their own ball, catch their own ball, like Peter Duggan did yesterday for Clare, is a huge fillip to any forward line, because it creates enormous opportunities then, you know, with players running off the shoulder and things like that. So Limerick looked awesome. They picked up a few injuries, as TJ mentioned. That is going to happen in the round-robin situation. With hamstrings, you can't take chances, because if you aggravate that problem or give it another tear, you know, and it goes up the grades, then you're in big trouble. So I think Clare or Limerick will be very mindful of the fact that they need to have Kyle Hayes and the Keane Lynches of this world really hopping off the ground come the All-Ireland series. And, you know, that's not insulting Munster finals or anything like that, but they need to have their guys fit and ready to go when it really counts.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, they're just such top-class players that, and it's going to hurt any team. But Mark, you know, Waterford, he did a fair... Anyone that listens to the show will know how highly we rate Éire Le Daily, you know, but to take out the All-Star full-back and put him out on Hago, to throw Éire Le in and Gillen. Now, look what happened, as I probably highlighted last night, that was misfortune, it was an injury, but did it upset their overall? I know they started very well, like.
They started fierce well, Anthony, and they had gone 4 or 5 points clear, and there was no major mention of Gillen early in the game. And no doubt Éire Le Daily's injury certainly upset them to a certain degree. To be fair, Daly, he was having a reasonably good game on Éire Le Daily, or on Gillen at that time. But it was a big call, I thought, by Cahill to move Prunty out of the full back line into the half back line. And that's more, I suppose, a respect that they have for Garrod Hegarty, I'd say, than trying to upset their own team. But you know what? Isn't it great that Cahill had a go? That's the most important thing. Like, I always think you learn a bit more in defeat than you do in victory. And like, Waterford are going to go away from the match over the weekend now, Anthony. And I think they'll analyse that till the cows come home and say, right, what do we need to get right for the next day? I suppose they'll look at the fact that Jamie Barron didn't start for the whole game. He'll be a big plus coming back. And then whether you leave Prunty on the edge of the square or not. And I suppose a bit surprising that they didn't start Cormac Daly as well at the same time, even though he didn't do too bad when he came on. So I think there's a lot of learnings there for Waterford, Anthony. They will be bitterly disappointed. But you know what is important? They never gave up. They never let the head sag in any shape or form. They got the 2 goals late in the game. They'll probably point to a couple of scores that they probably missed, that they probably should have scored. And I suppose the one man during the league, Stephen Bennett, was reasonably okay, but wasn't any brilliant, you know, wasn't his brilliant best. And I think for Waterford, like, they got a massive tune out of Desi Hutchinson in the second half in particular. He was brilliant. But if Stephen Bennett had played a little bit better, I suppose they would be an awful lot closer. So for Waterford to win, I suppose the next day, now depending, and we've probably already touched on it, whether they want to be in a Munster final or whether suiting to come through the back door, that might be something that's obviously going to play out over the next couple of weeks. But I think if I really was in Waterford's shoes, I don't know would I want to be playing Limerick again in a Munster final. I think the next time they meet them would prefer to be a little bit further down the track. I think Liam Cahill will take a lot away from the weekend. That's no disrespect. We all know that Limerick are the best team in the country, and they're hot favourites now, I presume, to win the All-Ireland, because, I suppose, with 10 minutes to go, they were gone 7 points clear and they looked like they were going to go on and maybe win by 8 or 9 or 10 points. But I would still say, I think if I was in Waterford's shoes, I learn a lot from the weekend, but I prefer maybe to only just be meeting them once more during this season.
Yeah, but I'd say the Limerick goal line, you know, for the 21-yard free mark they'd be disappointed to let it in. It seemed a low dipper from Stephen Bennett. But if that hadn't come and Limerick had gone up, as we probably expected them when they went 7 and got 3 more points, yeah, to say, like, and it was 10, which, I mean, yeah, they did get a couple of more points afterwards. But would you say they've learned a lot then? Like, I'm a bit... Like, if you look at Clare and Tip and what Clare could do to Tip. Now, every day is different. We totally understand that, and every day out is different. But is there a dip in Waterford since the league final? Like?
I wouldn't think so. Well, you could look at it from afar. Like, if you go on a clear line of form, and the Tipperary has been the line of form, but this, I won't say they struggled to beat Tip. It was a topsy-turvy game. They led, Tip took over, then they came back and Tip closed it out well. And then Tip got really hockeyed over the weekend. Like, the Tip put everything into the Waterford game. They looked jaded and exhausted yesterday. You know, we always say that the first match is probably the key one, and Clare were eyeing up this game for the last 5 or 6 months. So they were going to come with everything they had. And you, we've always said that if you had a game under your belt, it's a little bit better. So it's very hard to read the form at this moment in time. But Anthony, we know deep down Waterford are a really, really good team. Now, Glenn hit points over his shoulder without looking on Saturday night, and they were incredible. And the home crowd were massive as well, I thought, for Limerick as well. And they got really, really good performances from a lot of the players, the Limerick players. Can the Limerick lads continue with that level of performance? That's a big question. Like, it was only 2 months ago, there was a bit of a, you know, concern about their form in the league, but they now have shown how good they are. But will they continue to, I suppose, to produce that type of performance? And we just definitely know it's in them. But will there be a lag at some stage? The injuries are going to, like, Kyle Hayes, I expect, might be back, but they mightn't chance him the next day. Keane Lynch could be out for 3 or 4 weeks. So there's a lot of things to play out yet, Anthony. But I think from a Waterford perspective, you know, they definitely came thinking they would have a right go. And I felt they did have a good go off of it. But there's definitely more in Waterford. Like, Tadhg De Borcke is one of their best players. He was quiet enough on Saturday night. There's more in him, and there's more in Stephen Bennett. And it was Ozzy, even though he hadn't been named to start, had a really reasonably good game again. But for Limerick to be beaten and for Waterford to beat them, Waterford will need every player, Anthony, playing at 100% and getting every rub of the green. But I think that they still have that ability to take down Limerick during the course of this year.
Okay, I'd probably agree to differ with that one. We'll see, I suppose, as time pan out. TJ, John let him out for a few pints and all Saturday night. Like, you're looking at the overall roadmap now, and you're saying it's in our hands now to pick out. You know, we win the next day, we have a nice and handy one then out in Innes. Like, might leave off a few. Might ask you to do that as well, TJ. But it looks kosher for you, like, doesn't it?
Look, I suppose winning your first two games and having 4 points on the board is exactly where you'd want to be. With 2 weeks to the next game, it was a perfect time to have, let's say, a night off for sure. I'm kind of with Mark on this one, Delo. I think that you're underestimating Waterford a tad. I thought that they did an awful lot right. Like Prunty picking up Hego, Éireann Daly picking up Gillan. They sent Callum Lyons after Will O'Donoghue, and he had unbelievable first half. They sent Austin Gleeson to 12 to target Burns. So they really went after the hammer effect in terms of trying to hurt Limerick.
They were a point down, TJ, after playing with the wind at halftime.
They were, but the couple of things I think they learned from, right, was the couple of stats that stick out for me was Limerick had 12 place balls and they scored 12 of them, right? Gillan and Burns, 100%, right? Waterford had 14 and they scored 10. Stephen missed two handy ones, or Stephen and Ozzy missed just before halftime, two that just drifted left. And in the start of the second half, they had a 65 and another handy free by his standards. So 10 from 14. So that's one small area. They also, in the second half, down the right-hand side with Ozzy, created a couple of nice goal chances where it was kind of on. Like, Desi was on the far side of Jack Prendergast. If the pass had been on, they maybe could have got a goal. In the first half in front of me as well, one of the probably unluckiest passes of the year from Jack Prendergast, where he tried to pick out Jack Fagan just over basically Mike Casey. It just didn't go to hand. There was a goal on there. So it seemed to be in their psyche that they needed to get goals. Make no mistake about it, Dillo. This was a proper game. Two teams went at it. They caused each other problems. Like, Kinnerk and Kiley were animated once or twice on the puck out because Waterford were having success. They did have their period on top and they did go 8-3 up. You've two of the best strikers of the ball at the moment in the game in Austin Gleeson and Dermot Burns fronting up. Possibly two best number 13s. Aaron Gillan got 6 from play. Desi got 5 from play. Possibly two of the best managements. possibly the two fittest teams in terms of the strength and conditioning and the way they can go after each other and survive in that middle third. So a couple of referee calls were a bit dubious and even maybe a little bit harder than Waterford once or twice. I know the Limerick crowd were getting animated about the Hago situation.
They were savaging him.
I thought they were savaging him, yeah. But like the tackle like for the hook on Tom Morrissey was excellent, which resulted in a free in, which was harsh. There was another one for overcarrying, and the one maybe against Gerard Hegarty for overcarrying in the second half. And maybe even the free against them. Tom Barron, let's say, for holding Gillan just for half time. There was lots of different incidents in the game. So overall, right, the other deciding factor was Limerick got 5 points off the bench. Colin O'Neill 3, David Reedy 1, and Pat Ryan 1. Whereas Waterford got no score off their bench, right? Now, they still have a strong panel. Éire Daly going off was a bit of a loss to them. And I suppose the question I don't know is, the guys that were missing for Limerick, what is that percentage difference? Like, what does Mike or Peter Casey, Seamus Flanagan, Keane Lynch... I think one of the stats I got hit with, my brother said it to me yesterday, was Keane Lynch was on for 9 minutes, and I think he had 8 possessions in 9 minutes or something, right? So that'll just tell you the influence that he can have in a game. But Cathal O'Neill did have a really good game. I know two of them got away from him. And the overall picture was Limerick had 41 shots at the post and Waterford had 33. So that probably told the story. But I think Cathal will be happy enough, Dillo. I think that he saw an awful lot of positives. Yes, they'll have to take every single chance. Yes, they probably would have found out that there are a couple of goals there if they can go after them. And, you know, like on a given day, they'll have to take every single chance. From Limerick's point of view, John will definitely be happy, given what he has dealt with injuries. But look, these are going to be factors in the games coming up. He'll be happy with what he got off. Even Conor Boylan, right? He's worked great. And I watched the game back. He was involved in a lot of the play. He was trying to make things happen for the other players. It did work to a certain degree. And as I said, Cathal O'Neill is a big plus. He's a forward now who can start. He can score. He's rangy. He's quick. He offers something different. So plenty of positives there. And maybe defensively in the second half, I thought once Limerick got to grips with him, outside of the two goals, that Declan Hannan, Dan Morrissey, Burns, Axis, Cannon caught 3 or 4 big balls there at times in the second half and lifted the siege. So definitely would be very happy to have 2 games won. But like you all say, it's early. There's no medals yet, Dillo.
No, there isn't. And just to say, I was watching it in the studio up in Dublin, be heading home there in a while now. A few Wi-Fi issues there. Apologies to anyone if the sound isn't hectic. But heading to Houston when we come off the air, TJ. But TJ, someone said to me that was at the game that a few of your lads had run out to the sideline to ask a couple of things. So maybe what you're touching on is right, that they did pose different questions. And but I think Ken touched on it as well. They're like, that you didn't allow Tadhg De Burka to dominate or to sweep. Like, Graham Mull and Conor Boylan seemed to be coming out on him in their turns to kind of man-mark him. Was that sticking out at you at the match? It's very hard to see that stuff on the screen, like, obviously.
It was. And Tadhg didn't have that influence in the game. And I'd say, I would say there'll be a change there to some degree. Maybe Tadhg might be picking up somebody, or he might position himself differently if the teams meet again down the road. But Limerick's use of the ball, as you well know at this stage, is very good. So Tadhg sitting in the pocket, they're well prepared for that. They have that well versed during the week, and they'll make sure they get the ball. But I suppose the other big plus for Limerick would be in the form of Gillan. Like, some of his scores he got were just unbelievable, like out the side. He was really a player in top form. He scored 13 points altogether, 6 of them from play. It was a phenomenal return, and they needed him to be that good. But the overall game, I still think Waterford caused a few problems. You probably would have seen anyone who was at the game in the second half. Limerick were trying to quell their puck out a couple of times, where they were getting the puck out away a little bit easier. But overall, as I said, I would have been impressed enough with Waterford. I still think they'll have a big say. They will definitely qualify. And I do think there will be a round two, or possibly maybe at some stage down the road, whether it be in Munster or whether it be in All-Ireland series, for sure.
Yeah, and one of the things, Ken, We did the road shows there, the three of us, you know, and we were in Limerick and in Cork, and I probably might have given him Diddy Hutchinson is a player we all love, I think, to watch. And did he finally maybe shake off the Sean Finn thing a little bit? I kind of was slagging a bit that he was brilliant until he met Sean Finn, but geez, he caused him a fair few problems on Saturday.
Yeah, like, I mean, Waterford, obviously, TJ alluded to the situation of creating goal chances. Now, let's face it, let's call a spade here. Waterford don't like going to Limerick. They don't like travelling to Limerick. There's history there of going to Limerick. So they really had nothing to lose going down the other night. You know, they had huge travelling support with them. Limerick obviously have, you know, Ross is support at this stage, you know, great support, hugely successful. So I think Cahill decided this is it now, we'll have a cut off this. And this is why he did those type of matchups, because he was preparing maybe for down the line, what are we going to have here? How will things work out here from the perspective of taking these guys on again? Conor Prunty didn't have a happy day against Tipperary on Marqueaux. So obviously he gave him a different role with Hegarty. Éire Daly unfortunately got injured, and Éire has picked up a couple of injuries as well, which has curtailed his involvement. So I think Walter would be quite happy with what happened last weekend. You know, they scored two goals, you know, in the last 5-10 minutes. So they know they can create openings there. Sean Finnan, outstanding cornerback. Daisy Hutchison, the delivery of the ball and the passes. The Jack Prendergast, the creator there. I think they're going along the right lines, Walter, in the fact that in the Turlises or the Croke Parks, particularly later on in the year, the Jack Prendergast will prosper. Jamie Barron, you mentioned him, will prosper in the open spaces. It's to create the space for Desi Hutchison. That's the key thing. No matter how good cornerback you are, as you well know, lads, if you're given that position and with the hands that Desi has, and Desi's good in the air for a smaller guy like Shane O'Donnell yesterday, he can win that hard ball as well. But I just think, you know, don't write off Liam Cahill or Mikey Beavins, because they prosper on being against the odds. You know, they lost two Munster finals with Tipperary, came back to win two All-Irelands. They love that siege mentality. Liam will be putting it up to the Waterford guys. And I think, as you said yourselves, they'll be going back to the drawing board. They'll be discussing matchups. They'll be discussing permutations. But the key thing here is that Limerick are in the driving seat, right? It's whether Limerick like it or not, it's all for Limerick to lose at a knockout stage, particularly semi-final or final. They're the two huge games for Limerick. So they've got to look down the road. I think it's a fantastic situation for John to be able to allow his players to have a night out on the town. Enjoy the crack, because this is a huge journey for this Limerick team in the last 3 or 4 years. They're having a savage time, great crack as well, enjoying their hurling, playing with confidence. But I think Waterford will be lurking in the wings. You mentioned they will qualify for Munster, probably. Whether they can qualify as a second or third team is a big ask. But I think from everybody's point of view, Waterford and Limerick playing in Croke Park or Turles is a different proposition, to be fair, than playing in the Gaelic Grounds last Saturday night, you know, where it was 10-1 home support.
Yeah.
Dylan, what was intriguing... What was intriguing during the game is, and I was trying to keep up with it to some degree, was the movement of the forwards. Let's say maybe where was Conor Boylan exactly positioned? What was his role? What was he trying to do in and out, right? Where was Patrick Curran playing? Desi was in and out. He was making runs from different places. Jack Fagan's run for that ball, that, as I said, that Prendergast gave him, like from wing back. There was a huge amount of movement. The other thing I think that's hugely positive for Limerick at the moment, and he's a player, obviously he's an all-star now, the year just gone, but he doesn't maybe get to the limit that some of the others get, is Darragh Dunham. He was unbelievable in the middle of the field. The amount of possessions he have, those 2 points he got were a critical time, which gave Limerick that little bit of a kind of a gap, like he got one off his left right at the sideline, and then the goalkeeper made a bit of a mistake and he put it back over the bar. That was probably just gave Limerick the
pushy
real bit
pushy from 3 out of 5 ahead, like
was huge. That was huge, and as I said, just a huge impact in the game. But yeah, really intriguing game. Like what I said, Waterford definitely have the players. There was a lot to like about it, but from Limerick's point of view, certainly be happy, certainly coped with it, and lots of different things going on, even in the puck outs. And you probably saw a reaction from John on the sideline there when Waterford got a puck out away to Ozzy and he stuck it over the barrel untouched, which he didn't like and stuff. So there was plenty of it going on. And to be honest, in the stand, trying to keep up with every move and tactical change, it was as good a game as I've been at in a long time now. I'd say in a couple of years. They really fronted up and went at each other.
TJ, Sean Stack, the referee, what did he contribute to the game, did you think?
Like, in fairness to Sean, right, and I said this at the time, right, this thing was so quick and it was so intense in the tackle, right? And I know some people have highlighted it since, because when you go in, right, and they say somebody comes in, what is a free and what is not a free? That's one of the challenges these referees have going forward. And when they put in a hand and the second hand goes in and they pull it out, and I mean the spare hand, it extremely difficult. In fairness, in difficult circumstances, I thought he did as good as he could. Like, I'm sure both Waterford and Limerick can pinpoint incidents and say that could have been a free that wasn't over carrying. There was a couple of iffy throws or whether there were hand passes. But what I will say at the moment, especially in the game just gone, I just don't know the future of a referee. And I was against maybe two referees before, but I'd say trying to keep up with everything that's going on now at the moment, it was just so quick. Yeah. Even the puck outs getting away so quick, just really, really hard to keep up with.
Yeah. No, I thought, in fairness, I thought he had a great game. And
yeah,
there was a huge amount of, like, Hegarty was very animated on a good few occasions. And he's a lucky boy. He didn't get yellow carded for the first tackle. In actual fact, after the first 10 or 15 seconds.
He didn't panic, and I thought his body language was good at times. I think to say he had a great game might be a bit maybe over the top. I think if it was maybe some other referee that we might be hard on, we might be saying that he missed four or five. Like the hook on Tom Morrissey was probably a harsh free to give away. There was a couple of other incidents where it was overcarrying. They were questionable. But as I said, it's gone very difficult. But overall, he did contribute, and he did have a good day out. But I will say, to be fair to the referees, and I'd be hard on them a lot of times, this game is getting more and more difficult to get those calls. The middle third is mad, especially in this particular one where the two teams fronted up.
TJ, we need new referees. We need fresh referees. Sean Stack, I think, is a breath of fresh air. I think he knows the game. He understands the game. He's with the players. He's talking to the players. We're crying out for guys like him. I've seen him before, you know, refereeing. I think he has the pedigree. I think he knows what he's about. That was the biggest game so far for him. As you said, you found it hard to keep up with every incident. I think the key thing there is the two sideline officials. They're mic'd up, TJ. They've got to give the call, definite free or definite pull or definite yellow, to give him that opportunity, to give him a bit of leeway and a bit of fresh air. But as a spectacle, TJ, as well, you were there live. For us watching, it was an unbelievable game. Do you know, the physicality, the hits. There was a lot of old-fashioned hurling in it as well, which was great to see as well. We had the mixture of everything. So from that point of view, I'd give Sean Stack great kudos there now.
I'd have to. The mix was beautiful. Both teams going long at times, both teams working through the lines, both teams going short. It had it all. It was as good a game, as I said, I'd been at in a while. It was a proper game.
Yeah, I first came across him refereeing. Obviously, he's Sean Stack's son, the great Sean Stack, because he's one of my favs growing up, back-to-back leagues, and came across the Cork 3-in-a-row team, obviously. And obviously, he's Stack from 8 miles out the road as well, TJ. So maybe the Limerick crowd are saying, "Hi, Stack." You know, like there's a neighbourly thing there. Obviously, he's done all his refereeing nearly in Dublin, and I would have come across him in Dublin, and I really rate him as a ref. I think he's very fair, which is always what I look for first. Like, you know, I think he's very genuine guy that wants to have, you know, wants it to be a good spectacle. And I think it's not about him. That's sometimes my criticism with some of the refs, it has to be about them. And I think Sean doesn't want to feature at all. Like, unfortunately, you have to blow the whistle every so often, I suppose, you know. So
I remember you mentioned him, Dale, about 2 years ago on the podcast here, that we were talking about young referees, and you mentioned Sean Stack as the one fella from Dublin you thought that would actually might make the breakthrough if he got. But Ken is right in what he just said about the linesmen being mic'd up plus the umpires. I think it's critical that those six people, seven people, even the fourth official on the sideline, that they're all on the one wavelength. And their job on the day is to get this game finished without any major incident. And if at all possible, have both camps going away saying the referee had no influence high up or low down in the match. And that's what we all want to see at the end of the day. We don't want to see a game being decided on a poor refereeing decision. That's the big thing.
Yeah. And look, unfortunately, sometimes that's what happens. It does. In a lot of the games. And you could look at the Dublin-Wexford, we look at it in a small while, you know, down to the last puck, maybe, you know, it's fine lines, isn't it? It sure is. Okay, lads, I think Limerick, the 8 to 13 looks good to me now, even. I just think there's so many, honestly, just throw this out, like, if Clare and Cork, anything could happen next Sunday, right? Anything could happen. I'm looking forward to going along. I haven't been at that many matches. Obviously, I'm curtailed a bit with the transport, but I'm looking forward to hitting off there and enjoying the day and I know there's a massive one in Salt Hill as well, but anything could happen in that match. Like, in Cork coming back from Jurassic Park could be like animals, obviously.
Or kittens, one or the other.
But like, if Cork do pull off a win, like, I think Waterford might have to come to Ennis and get something in the last match, and Clare could be playing for their lives as well. And while it is one of the biggest pitches in Ireland, Mark, it mightn't be that big that day. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I know exactly what you're saying, Dale.
Rory Hayes and Desi Hutchinson could have less space to operate in that day. And it has been done before, both in hurling and football in Cusick Park.
You have to make space for the photographers on the sideline. I hear you.
Yeah. You'd hate to see anyone knocked out over the line, like, you know what I mean?
or like the Tipperary fans in 84 when they crowded Simple Stadium that time.
So it was 87.
The run through the crowd.
91.
Yeah. You were at the other goal, Ken. You were safe enough.
I was very safe. poor old Ger got the brunt of it.
I tell you, that's even right. 4 years later, when we had gone a bit clear of ETJ in the Munster final, remember the bit of a pitch invasion from the Clare crowd? And I was marking Gala near the end of it, you know, Mike Gallagher. And he says to me, "Fair play, Dale. I suppose you've waited long enough." Like, he says, I said, "Shut up, Gala." And I was roaring at the Clare crowd to get off the field. Like, I thought it would be abandoned or something, you know. Jesus, get off the field. Like, you know, like, fucking hell. Queer things happened to us afterwards, like, you know, in terms of whistles being blown earlier.
Pitch invasions.
There you go. People sitting down the field and all that. But I'm not bitter.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
So look, onto yesterday. I mean, look, for me, it was great. I was watching it there with Desi and Don Logue, I suppose, and Wesley. And I do get a bit animated, I suppose, watching the Clare games. I just couldn't believe what was happening. And I don't know if Brian is still living with you, Ken, or whatever, but if he came home last night, he might have been asking you, "Was there anyone minding me, Dad?" Like, because the two saves he made, like, and the next thing, it comes out and there's a Clare flare and no sign of a tip man, like, you know. So I couldn't believe what was unfolding in front of my eyes, and I'd say poor old Brian definitely couldn't believe it.
Yeah, we, the bird's eye view, I suppose, of it all, to tell the truth, Dalo, we were apprehensive from the start. I'd be very aware of Sean Tracy's knowledge of Tipperary hurling and also his knowledge of the Kittadangan lads. And obviously Peter Duggan, huge plus for Clare in that situation. I think a few things were discussed that we've harped on, but Peter Duggan's constant winning of the high ball, he was a huge part to play in the victory. But overall, the strength of the Clare team, I'd heard about Clare Dalo playing Galway you know, a couple of previous weeks, scoring four goals, and Galway were very impressed with Clare were moving. So I was well aware of the fact that Clare were going to come, you know, with something big yesterday. They had a point to prove. They were in hard luck last year against us. There was that little bit of controversy about that penalty that was given last year. I think Brendan Bugler played a stormer there. It was a bit like James Woodlock in the 16 All-Ireland with Tip and Kilkenny. Brendan made a, you know, a simple remark. "I'm very surprised at the appointment of this referee." And all those little things count in these different situation. So from that perspective, Tip came with savage intensity against Waterford, huge aggression. Noel McGrath was absolutely unbelievable. Had the chances maybe to get at least a draw. But yesterday, you know, we got caught at tartar really, because Clare dominated us from start to finish. We knew, like, the Clare were going to come up on the give Tipperary the puck outs. I mean, that was, Clare had huge success against Limerick in the National League, as you remember, in that drawing game where it was a low-scoring game. They just gave the puck out to the full back line and crowded the middle third, particularly down their own 45. And that sort of transpired yesterday. that the lads were getting the ball, were trying to travel through the lines we had, were getting disrupted. Great intensity from Clare, you know, David Fitzgerald, particularly Cottle Malone, broke down a lot of play. Young Robin Munsey, you know, was like a terrier there, flying in on it. Shane O'Donnell playing at wing forward, it was a new lease of life for him because he was springing on everything. So the lines, that breaking down the lines, broke down in a big way there. Anything that went long, then they dominated on. So from that perspective, though, Tony Kelly, his off the ball work yesterday rather than his on the ball work was a huge factor in the win, because he played out around the middle of the field. He floated everywhere. Wherever the ball was going, he went the opposite side, which meant it opened huge alleys down the Tipperary defence. And like when you see a 4-2 situation for one of the goals, there was actually 4 forwards against 2 backs. And then when the ball was saved, when it came back out, the forwards were actually inside the back. So it was soul destroying, I suppose, from the point of view of Tip, that the balls were saved and hit back into the net. I think that's a bigger kick in the teeth than the actual direct goal being scored. Yeah, when you see that's deflating for the team. But overall, Clare were way superior. I think we got 3 points from Clare, lads, from our forward line. 3 points from Clare. We had a strong breeze, which was a really considerable breeze in the second half. We didn't score for 20 minutes. We scored 2 goals. We scored no point. We have a few of the guys were just off form. And I think overall, it was a really flat display from Tipperary. Colm, you have to give him some leeway. He's after coming in at the deep end, Colm Bonnery's managing team, because of the fact of they've had to blood new players. And those players did very well below in Waterford. But yesterday, we got caught, I suppose, in the headlights in a situation that Clare's running game, their off-the-shoulder game, they mixed up their game, and their direct ball paid dividends down on Peter Duggan. And Ian Galvin profited from that as well in a big way, in the fact that it made space for him as well. So we were really in a tough situation at half-time. Dan McCormick was pulled at half-time. You know, I was only looking before you came in, lads, and it was nearly like a bet. I was looking at Tip team that's on the wall there. I saw the 3 matters in the front: Bonner, Paddy, and yeah. Brendan sitting beside each other. Bubbles, Shamie Cannon, and Niall O'Mara. People forget about Niall O'Mara, Bill O'Mara, as we call him. All scrappers, all huge men in the air, all great warriors in Tipperary. And I suppose Colm, you know, he's playing with one hand tied behind his back from the point of view that he's had to blood these youngsters, and he's getting the stick for it now. You know, I heard Pádraig Joyce saying, you know, this took 3 years to happen, Galway winning against Mayo yesterday after 4 attempts, I think, against Mayo. So I think this situation, Colm has got to be patient. We can't throw the ties out of the pram. It was a huge defeat for us. It was a big victory for Clare. And what's going to transpire from now is that obviously Tipperary public have got to bite their lips and have that bit of patience. But of course, it's easier said than done in a county like Tip, as you well know.
Oh, sure. I can only imagine, Ken, like, you know, just hurling wall to wall almost. And I would say, in fairness to Colm, you know, 2 of the best men I thought for you yesterday were Craig Morgan, again, I think, backed up his form in terms of, you know, the amount of ball he got on. Ger Brown, you know, was a huge positive in the second half. The amount of plays he was in, Carl Barrett was his usual. Even though I'd say Clare threw him a little bit with Robin Mounsey going on, he might say he was saying who, you know?
Yeah.
And none of us, I mean, I know Tip are down key. Like, I mean, the men you mentioned there are monumental men, maybe Clare not missing, but I would say Ed McCarthy, Mark Rogers, they'd be big losses. Just wanted to ask you, Ken, without breaking confidences, look at, I know your son is in goal, and was the Tommy thing a bit of a distraction during the week, and would that have upset things a little bit? Like, I was kind of delighted with that she played fairly well in Waterford, because I thought it put Clare really, lads coming in now to the bar to me, I said, Jesus, Clare won't be the way Tip hurled below in Waterford, and if one has Waterford, maybe it's the big threat to Limerick. And I thought just things were working in Clare's for you. You know the way the zen has to happen for you and things have to fall in. And like I you know the regard I have for Tommy, sure, I wouldn't, you know, when I was on a couple of bits of contact with him late in the week, you know, just keep telling him, keep the chin up and get your appeals in there, kid. And but would that have been a factor, do you think, in the overall flatness.
I'm sure it is, because like Tommy, obviously the continuity from the previous management, right, of Liam Sheedy's management. So he's the only one. And it took a huge amount of persuasion, because that management went and then Colm came in. So Colm then had to build a management team. And I think there was a lot of work done in the background, because Tommy, you know, is such a genuine man. He's given so much to Tipperary, coach, minor, 21, and senior All-Ireland winning teams. And I know better than anyone, you know, coach with me with the 21 team. So I know what Tommy gives to it. And Tommy's a very quiet disposition, but on the field, in training, he gives of his all of his body. He gives of his mental strength to relay it to the players, to transfer it to the players. And he's done a huge amount of work with this new group coming in with a new management. So I think it's so destroying for Tommy to be in the situation he's in, because, like, if anything, I'd have been always with, you know, when Tommy as a player and Tommy as a coach, you'll be saying, Tommy, you know, I suppose, assert yourself even stronger, be a stronger personality, because you're such a savage ability to coach people and manage people. So I think this is a huge kick in the teeth for Tommy at the moment, being under the cosh, and probably in that situation, being on the side and yesterday, he was subdued compared to the normal Tommy that can travel around, because you don't want to inflict the wrath of going on the pitch again and someone's pointing a finger at you or coming off the pitch or something like that. So every little element, as you well know, lads, it's all made up of little elements, and every little element counts in that situation. But it was a muted Tipperary performance. We can't get away from that. That aggression factor was never there yesterday. We didn't come up to the pitch of the game. Everything that we tried didn't work. We created opportunities, we didn't finish them from the very start. So from that perspective, it was just one of those days, lads. We've all had them. You mentioned that, Dalo, yourself. We've all had those days. But we cannot just despair at this stage. We have two big games left in the Championship. Tip and Limerick is always a local derby in the Gaelic grounds. Tip will have to be really chomping at the bit in the next 2 weeks. There's no time to feel sorry for us. The way the round robin works, lads, it's the hurt. You know, the rugby guys that clap each other off the pitch, you know, the soccer guys to get ready for the next game. And with the round robin, Tip at least have 2 weeks to recover, to revive themselves. The same as Cork have 2 weeks to revive themselves next Sunday against Clare. So I think Tip will just have to have a bit of soul searching in that dressing room. We're going down to the lines then in the Gaelic grounds, but we must throw off the shackles. You know, and you know, the Bonners of this world that we haven't seen. We saw him for 20 minutes. We didn't see him yesterday. The Paddy Cadells of this world that we haven't seen. Obviously, John McGrath's injury is a huge blow, but we've got to just gel together, work harder than ever, and throw the kitchen sink at Limerick and the Gaelic grounds. Basically, that's what we have to do. The very same as we did against Waterford. And you know, we matched Waterford puck for puck for the majority of that game.
Yeah. It's still to play for. People wouldn't be fancying your chances, I suppose, Ken, with the score difference and going to play Limerick, obviously. But Limerick, yeah, you just have to drive on. That's the reality. Mac, I don't know what way you'd have felt about Clare's performance. Obviously, you probably you have to worry about yourselves, I suppose, have you?
Oh, we want to worry about the selectors, maybe, and see what they're going to do, like, because I tell you, there's every scribe, I'd say, in Cork at this moment in time knows after saying the same thing as what we said in the podcast about twisting and
sticking.
You know, the centre back position, Mark Coleman, John Melrick, why isn't Hannity starting? All this kind of stuff. There are a couple of questions that need to be answered. And without even having to see training, I'll be just saying, I presume John Melrick is going to be picking up Tony Kelly, whatever he plays. I'm presuming that. I don't think we'd have to go too far, because he was given the responsibility to mark TJ Reid last year. He's fully fit, so I would presume he'll be marking him. The biggest quandary then
is that, can I just ask you, Mark, is that after watching yesterday, I think Ken summed it up very well. Like, we didn't get a 10 out of 10 Tony on the ball and scoring, but look at the space he created by dragging Shemmy Kennedy out. Is that a concern? Like, that, you know, let me finish. You're not so sure about 3 and 6, and then you're taking Melrick out of there, like, following Tony, who'll drift back the field. Like, would you be as well off with Tony getting maybe 1-4 from play and your six backs being solid?
So I suppose just to answer the question, I suppose the 3-6, yeah. 3-6 have been a problem for a long, long time. Brian Cochrane and Diarmuid O'Sullivan haven't really been replaced by... No, they were two magnificent players themselves, so it's very hard to replace guys like that. Mark Coleman, obviously, is the big enigma, really, like, as to what he's contributing to the overall thing here. So, you know, John Melrick is a man marker, Anthony, and he's a very, very effective man marker. He's ended up in the middle of the field for the league final and the first round of the championship against Limerick. And Jor, I think with all due respects, is a better man marker than probably most of the backs that we have at this moment in time. And we've often commented on how loose the Cork backs are also. So Timani's very loose, you know. The only other person who's capable of marking somebody like Tony Kelly would be Sean O'Donoghue, and I don't think that Cork are going to bring him out of the full back line to mark him. So, you know, in essence, what you were asking me, are we better off to concede 1-4 from play for Tony Kelly? Absolutely not, because if Tony Kelly gets 1-4 from play, every other Clare player will think that they're Christy Ring, I suppose, really, because he will ignite the Clare team.
Who's that?
That's what
who's
he'll
that?
Do. He'll
ex- who's that?
What? Who's that?
TK.
Yeah. Yeah, did you hear it? I thought you missed it for a second. So, in other words, I think an awful lot of your players will grow 2 feet taller if Tony Kelly scores 1-4 from play. So okay. To me, Cork need to shut down Tony Kelly and shut him down quick and don't give the team any oxygen whatsoever from the get-go, because if they will get it, I think they will warm to the task the same as they did just today. So that's the first thing. The second question is who's going to start full-back. I'm really, really hoping that Darrow Leary will be fit to play against Tip this Wednesday night in the under-20 game. And I certainly hope that he'll be allowed to play in the match is the big thing, because he could do the championship match under his belt. And if he's an option, then I think it's either him or Rob Downey will play a full-back to Mark Duggan. That's the big call. After Duggan's performance yesterday, now he'll need to be marked by somebody with a bit of size. Other than that, then, the John Connellan factor, because he was magnificent yesterday. Are you going to pay young Barrett on John Connellan, or do you put in the warrior for the last 10 years on this cock forward, like Jamie Hannity, restore him to his best position, centre forward, and lads, stop playing around messing with the puck out. Stop to drive a few balls down on top of Jamie Hannity, and you have your runners then coming in the front and in the behind for the breaking ball. Hannity is our number one ball winner. I can't understand in the league final, playing wing forward, hit hardly any ball whatsoever during the course of the game and then taking off 5 or 10 minutes in the second half. Doesn't make any sense to me. It looks like the selectors are trying to move him on, if you ask me. I'm shocked at that, to be honest with us. But when you get new management in, they kind of sometimes feel the young players have to be blooded. I'm always of the view, blood the young fellas when they prove they're good enough to take the jersey from the men before them. And I don't think there's any, like Kieran Joyce has proved it. Darrow O'Leary was proven, but I think he had a broken bone in his foot and they played him against Kilkenny in the league semi-final. That's turned out now to be proved positive that he had a broken bone in his foot, but he seems to be back fully training, which would be a big plus, I think, for Cork. But I think in the overall context, Anthony, Cork are well worn now. And you asked me in Limerick a couple of weeks ago what was the most important game of the season for Cork. It kind of was intimating that prior to the question that the Cork and Clare game was the most important, because I didn't really fancy Cork against Limerick. I know, we all know, and I think you know, and the whole Munster public will know, the Cork, whoever wins the game on Sunday, I think, will be fighting out for that third position. That's the way I call it at this moment in time.
You sound confident, Dominic.
I'm not. Oh, Jesus. You couldn't be confident. You couldn't be confident because you just don't know what's going to happen with the way that... Listen, I think Owen Cadigan had a very, very good article in the paper last week there on the Examiner where he said he felt that there was an arrogance amongst the Cork selectors now that they weren't going to twist the team because it was a case of, oh, we're Cork, or this is this management team or this coaching staff, this is what we know our players best. I think 99% of the public in Cork want changes made. and it'll be brave management now, Dela. Brave management now need to step up and make a couple of changes to try and get us over the line on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't know if we've lost Ken. I know he has to go, and we were delayed starting. So if he's gone, we can't do anything. TJ, Clare, would the bother of going to Torrey? What did you think of Clare? I don't know. Cork, we've had a good spiel about Cork there now. Like, so it's vitally important.
I've heard very little about Clare so far, but I've heard a good bit about Tip and Cork. So I go back to the start. I was actually complimentary enough of Tip's defensive structure against Waterford the first round. And I don't know whether they just disregarded, as you said there, what Clare could bring. Like, there were so many things wrong with the performance from their own point of view. Their defensive structure in what they allowed in the first half, their general work rate, all around the pitch, their tackling. It just wasn't where it should have been. And it wasn't anywhere near the intensity they brought to Walsh Park. So I don't know whether that was anything to do with Tommy Dunn. And that particular incident, I know it's going to be appealed. And, you know, I just see, even with Johnny Murphy, like, he's getting blamed by the Tip people. But we don't even know the full side of the story there as what went on. So that shouldn't really have been a factor for the players. I would have thought playing at home in Turles, nice big home crowd, that they would have wanted to go and deliver a performance, building on. And that's what Tip normally have done in the past. But there was an awful lot wrong here. On the flip side of that, Dillo, there's an awful lot to like about the Clare setup, in that he's had a run now, like, a little bit, I won't say injury free, but he's got his big players. Like Shane O'Donnell to wing forward. Like, there's creativity, there's movement, there's pace. Like, he sees the passes quicker than a lot of players. He has that bit of vision that you'd like, where he can see something happens very quick. Duggan, obviously, in the full forward line, is a big handful. He's a scoring forward. He brings something different. And that takes the pressure hugely off TK, as we well know. As you said there already, like the likes of Ryan Taylor, Robin Mounsey, I know Young Meehan didn't play. Like, these guys have stepped up too, right? Callum Long going to the middle of the field. So there's an awful lot to like about the Clare offense, for sure. Whether the defense can match up against maybe a team that might be a little bit more clinical than Tip yesterday, and maybe if he didn't throw as many hurlies in the defense going forward, where maybe the referee could pick up on them. They are questions for Clare. So can the Clare defense sort the Cork attack next week? I'm sure it can, and that's going to be where the game is going to be won and lost. But there's huge fluidity now in teams, right? So TK could play inside this week. And what I would say to teams like Tipperary and Cork is, my mantra in the past would have been, you have to fix your own house first. You have to start with the defence. You have to make sure that you get that bit right and then build from there. Because there's no point in Cork coming out next week and maybe set up Jerm Elleray to pick up Tony Kelly at wing forward or midfield or whatever, and Tony Kelly starts at 13 and then the whole thing is thrown again. Like, because all those things are potentially possible, right? But the point for Cork, which Mark has touched on here, is, like, is there going to be a change? That's number one. Like, there's a little bit of, what would you call it, admiration for a coaching team who, when something doesn't work, that you back it and stick with it and say, right, well, I still believe in this. This will work, right? Now, how do you differentiate between that and madness, Dale, or doing the same thing over and over again? That's the challenge for the coaching team. And I think we've all been there.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's a good point. And one of the things with Clare, like, is that I know people would question, like, would they have John Conlon up full forward or corner forward or wing forward? I liked Cleary and Conlon yesterday. Tip did have a couple of chances early on. Ever Quilligan made a great save, but you consider, I suppose, the second goal was very soft. A mistake, I suppose, like, that any goalie can make. You know, but, like, I like the 3-6 thing. Cleary, he doesn't clear a mount of the ball, but his men seldom does much. And we saw the damage Mark Keogh could do below Walsh Park, and didn't get any latitude like that. Like, so whereas Cork, the doubts about 3-6, I thought Clare, no, every day is different, but I thought they answered a good bit of that, and there's no doubt about it. Paul Flanagan and Rory Hayes had great games as well. Like, so yeah, Dave McInerney's best championship game in a long, long time. Tip way off it, and maybe we got a false sense in the previous week.
They were definitely way off it. That, like, you see their tackle count, and you said even the scoring from play, it was just off whatever it was. Now, maybe, like, sometimes you put that down to the opposition, to say they weren't left to it, and, like, they got pulled and dragged a lot of past the half back line for Tip, and Clare had overloads time and time again in that runners. And as I said, Shane O'Donnell is a line breaker, whether it is with his vision or his pace, or his just ability to see that pass, and he's definitely making it. Like, he's not tied up inside in the full forward end, Dillo, so he is a ball player. Like, I think for Brian to have all those players available to him is definitely a big plus for Clare.
Yeah, the puck outs, we highlighted the puck outs a bit last night, and you know, I just felt Clare were a bit one dimensional. Now, I did, and I do think as well, like, you're 13 up at half time. You're saying, ever let it down the field, like, and Dougie coming out from full forward to try and contest. But a lot of it came back at them. I think he'll have to look at Limerick maybe in Waterford and have to try and change up the puck out a bit for next week, Mark, because I know you've said it, let it down in Harnedy at 11, and yeah, but you can't be too predictable either, can you? And I thought Clare were a little bit too predictable in the second half.
Yeah, but like, I would say, look, there's a huge amount of theory going into the game, and I think Limerick are magnificent now, right? They're the same level now as what Kilkenny were when they were going for the five in a row. And I'd actually go as far as to say they might even be a little bit better than Kilkenny, I would suspect. It would be just a fantastic matchup if you could go back and have that Kilkenny team and the current Limerick team. And it's great the way they use the ball, fantastic. And because they have the best players. And when you have the best players, it's very easy to, I suppose, have a game plan and execute a game plan when you have the very, very best fellas available. But when you don't have the best fellas, then, Anthony, you've got to make up with work rate, determination, attitude, all those, you know, very good traits that an awful lot of our hurlers in this country have. So,
yeah, but Mark,
I don't know.
I know what you're saying about theory, right? But like what Dale was saying there about puck outs, right? You can't just go along and belt 12 or 13 puck outs long, right? And not be winning only one or two of them, because that'll eventually come and hurt you, right? So you have to have some sort of a structure around it that there is potential for movement within the game. I think that's what Limerick do really, really well. So if you can go short and you have the players to ping one or two balls, and Waterford did it as well, through that middle third, great. The option to go along every now and again where you have a ball winner, but you can't keep doing something. You can't keep going short if they're breaking down. And I even see something on Twitter during the week there, that guy Sean Flynn, who did great stats on puck outs, that basically when you win short, is did you win them in the opposition half? Like, so again, interesting reading, right? So I know what we're saying about we don't want a huge amount of theory, but at the same time, you have to play to your own team strengths. And if that is that going short works better for you, well, then that's what you have to do. If you can win your puck outs long, then that's what you have to do. In Cork's situation, if you keep going long with puck outs and you're not winning them, well, then the boys have to go short.
That's a different story.
It's trying to merge those two plans and have the fluidity within a half to say, right, this isn't working, we need to change it up quick. And that's where your on-field leaders, and that's where your all-around knowledge and your video analysis the week or two up to the game, where you're showing the opposition, this is what they're good at, these are their stats, they're really good at this, and then they change it, and this is how we counteract it. That's what's in the game today, whether we like it or whether we don't. And
okay,
I'm going to say, and this one point, right? There's a lot of club teams now trying to play the ball short, and they don't have the players to do it. So the key thing is, whatever system you come up with, you have to be happy that your players can execute that system.
They can execute the plan, exactly. So the last thing I think that the Cork want this to see happening, particularly the public, and look, I know the players and the management won't care what the public will look at, but if you go to the cornerback who comes across to the fullback, who goes out to the other cornerback and back to the
goalie,
keeper, and then launches it, I tell you now, TJ, collect the P45 before you leave Tullis next Saturday or next Sunday. You have a very good racing friend here that you went down to meet Henry de Bramhead with last Thursday, and I happened to meet him on Saturday because there was an under-6 blitz, football blitz down in Killa. And he said to me, Mark, I never thought I'd see the day where I wouldn't want to go to see Cork playing. But he said, I came out of Tullis after the league final and I promised myself I'd never go and see them again. It was such a disgusting performance. And he didn't go to the Limerick game, I'm led to believe, but if he saw the Limerick game live, he'd have been tearing down to the selectors and telling them, lads, for God's sake, this is a game of hurling. Would you get on with it and give the forwards a bit of a chance down below? Because if you're to win any game, the forwards will do the scoring, but they can't do the scoring, TJ, if they haven't got the ball. The defenders don't need to have the ball back over and back the field trying to make themselves look good and say, I got 45 possessions today, but I didn't come forward 3 yards. Stop the lights, will you? Come on.
let's just say the three of us are in the Cork management team this week and we're going playing Clare, right? So we're not privy to how training has been going and how players are playing, right? So I suppose the big question that those guys have is you sit down, and this is the reality is do they stick or twist, right, with what they believe? They believe at the start of the season that Mark Coleman was going to do a job for the team the way they want to play at six. Now, changing that now is a big call. So like they're either backing themselves, right, and they're going to try to prove the rest of us wrong to say this can work, which it can, right, or else they change. So that's the big call from this week.
But I think they have to change. I think they have to change to a certain extent.
There's no doubt they have to change. Like three years ago, John Myler had left Mark Ellis off the team, off that panel. He was in this. He was up in the terrace, and a week later, he was centre back and Cork won. Now that's a bit dramatic, I would have to say. Mm. I think there's a couple of tweaks that could be done. I think Mark Coleman out to the wing, either Rob Downey goes full back or Darragh O'Leary comes full back. Tim O'Mahony, his positioning, do you move him to the forwards or not? There's a couple of those key questions, TJ.
For sure.
And if they get them right, now I do believe if the three of us sat down, we'd come to a conclusion about what would be the best starting 15.
It would probably take us a while.
It would, but we'd get there. We'd get there. And we'd have a good chance of winning.
I would say there's a strong possibility, Marco, that TK will be positioned at number 11 on Sunday. Just to test whatever you come up with early doors to see, are you really buying into that? Are you going man marking? So that's the big question again, is what you do then. So now are you throwing plan B out of the way and you're going to plan C? So that's the fluidity within teams. But you, as your manager of your team, have to back your system to say, look, the opposition are going to try different things, but we have to back what we're doing. And if those management teams back Mark Coleman again, it's because they believe that this will work.
Yeah. Look, it's going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to going to it. I hope the Cork crowd don't give up altogether and come to Thurles. And we'll have a good bit of crack outside the old Greyhound track beforehand and old maybe bottle of cider. And I know, Mark, I think he'll be back. And there's no fear of you. I think it's very close last year between the teams. Patrick Collins made a great save from TK. And I expect it to be as close again, to be honest. I think it's going to be down to... If I'm a Cork player now, I'm loving this, like, because Clare come out and beat Tip 8 points. And I think it's right up Cork's alley. But at the same time, I understand that you just would have concerns.
I'm wondering where the morale of the team is right now, Anthony. That's the big thing for me. And we've had a good bit of success against Clare in the last decade, I would say, to be fair. And a lot of those players have had a good bit of success. But, you know, Tony Kelly is an exceptional player.
Interestingly, I think you're on the front foot now. Before we move on from it, the bookies make Cork reasonably strong favourites.
Yeah, what are they, 4-7 or something?
It's gas, isn't it?
Yeah. How much you've seen, so.
Anyway. We'll have a look at Leinster. Obviously, Leinster, much to be said about Kilkenny 234 scoring and Galway 337. Like, it's just, I don't know where we're going with that. Like, it's just, I suppose we talked a bit about it last night, and, you know, it's not easy. But look, solutions. We might get a chance someday to have a good, myself and Don Law get a bit of a chance last night. Yet, I know we got plenty jib on Twitter afterwards that, there wasn't any coverage really of the Joe McDonagh down long, like, you know, so I understand that as well. And I know when you're on the Sunday game, as the time constraints are incredible, like, you're just...
But tell me, Anthony, is there any thought going into having a hurling Sunday game and a football Sunday game, and you can watch it behind the red button, whichever one you want to watch, like, because there's just too many games to be covered now. And the boys in the Christy Ring and the Joe McDonagh, they're dead right, because the lack of respect shown, the lack of TV coverage of those two sports is critical. And if you're playing in the lower leagues or the lower championship, you do want some of that media attention. And for me, it's coming close now that you have to have a hurling TV show and a football TV show. For me, like.
Yeah, well, TJ has been banging that drum there for a while. And I'm kind of honoured to be on the Sunday game, you know. I mean, they took me back after I left them after 2 years and went off to coach the Dubs, and took me back. And I really enjoyed it. I suppose you're not a player, you're not a mentor. It's nice to be involved. You know, even what we do here, we love doing it because we get a chance to express our views and that. But yeah, the time constraints are and rights and all that is an issue. And hopefully it could be ironed out. I know rights are, I think, oh God, I won't go bluffing now, but I think they're up, they're due to be renegotiated or whatever. So hopefully the GAA would see this as a way to promote the game and give it more time.
Yeah, it's important. The other thing that's madness, Dello, is this Sunday. Two big hurling games on, and they're both on at 2 o'clock on Sunday. I don't know who's making bonkers. Those decisions, but bonkers. Mm.
Of course, you have massive amount of football games really kicking off now as well, and
that's more to the point that the hurling should be on at two different times, even a Saturday night game.
Yeah, I would love to be going to hurl a Saturday evening. It would suit everybody. Yeah. I know. Sure, look, but. Anyway, hopefully we might actually dedicate maybe even a midweek show, the three of us, and get a couple of guests on and talk about where the future is. I know we're up against the clock today, and that's my fault. Well, not really my fault. I don't know. I thought I had perfect Wi-Fi here in the hotel, but anyway.
Still your fault, hello.
I know. It's still my fault, ultimately. Lads, you don't listen to me too often, the two of you. You know, I know you're better at the horsey game than I am, and you're good with the tips and that kind of thing. But like you were told the three in Leinster would be the Dubs and Galway and Kilkenny, but you just don't listen to me. Like, did you go along with me in that, TJ?
I certainly did, Dillo.
Okay. good game, different type of game, I suppose. It hadn't the intensity of the later game Saturday, but a great win for Dublin. Wexford, you'd be pulling your hair out a bit if you're a Wexford supporter, like with that long the puck out.
You would.
And yet they nearly pulled it off again, like as if Liam Ryan had taken on the shot to be coming away with another draw and to miss the penalty, I suppose, and Conor McDonald's one was amazing. It didn't go.
It was a great goal chance, wasn't it? Yeah, they should have had they've had two penalties on both games, and like Marcus struck both of them well. Like one went over and one was well saved. And I mean, they're critical. Like when TK got the penalty yesterday, there was only one result, and I mean, they are huge. The couple of frees for Wexford as well that they missed, and when Chin came on, then he nailed them. And
Very little support up front for Rory O'Connor, though, you'd have to say it.
Very little. Yeah.
He was outstanding.
He was. I just think that, as I said, it was a huge game. Like, the power is with Dublin now in terms of trying. Like, if they can beat the other two and to get the 6 points, I suppose, like Wexford will be looking for maybe a big win over Kilkenny or else. Probably to be Kilkenny and see where that takes him. But yeah, they'll be disappointed. Like, to get so close again in the finish, Dublin were kind of kept pushing that 4 and 5 points, and the wind was a factor, and they got ahead. But look, you highlighted it last time. Like, that whole strategy now about the restarts, puck outs, your offensive plan and your defensive plan, and how much tier you go into, Mark, that is part and parcel of the modern game. And it's trying to mix that with the right players, the right brand of play that suits you, having your players playing really well within the system and giving them the freedom within that. So it's a combination of all of them. And like I said before, the reason that the Mikey Beavens and the Paul Canucks are where they are and the reason that we are where we are aligned.
I will say, just back to you on that now, right? I don't really know how the three of us would fit into the current system when two of us would want to get the ball in the hand and maybe lamp it down into a corner forward as fast as possible, right?
Well, I've never said that now, if you're including me with you on that line of things.
So you're telling me you would want to be getting the ball half back and you want to be flicking it back to Frank Lowen and then getting him to strike the ball down the field or striking it back to Brian Lowen, is it?
Back to Fitty.
I don't think so, Dale.
Back to Fitty.
Yeah. Like any man that goes over to Shawnee McMahon and tells him, Shawnee, step aside there, my friend. I'll take this free now, right, because the All-Ireland is on the line. I'll tell you this much. If you were a player in the current Cork camp, I'd say you'd be saying, listen now, Donny Grady, and your great knowledge on game plans, I'll be lamping a few of them down to Hoggy there full forward. And it's his problem if he's not willing to run or get out from behind Mike Casey and get into freedom. Because there was a lot of that now last week with a couple of forwards not making any runs at all. So I'd say Sean O'Donoghue and Tim O'Mahony would be fairly happy with the forwards last week when they looked up and there was nobody running. So there's a couple of things to be done. But anyway, saying all that, going back to Dublin, Dela, I picked Wexford to get through because of the home crowd, and they nearly got there in the end. But for me, why Lee Chin didn't start is a big question for me, because I thought he got his half an hour under his belt the previous week. This was the key game for Wexford to win. For them to qualify, they ultimately needed to win this game. And unfortunately, they've come up short. And he had a magnificent game, Lee Chin, when he came on, and he dragged them back into the game. So I was a bit surprised that he wasn't starting.
He's gone there, Marco. He must have either got sick of listening to us, or else he got sick of, I don't know, maybe talking about it. But it was Lee Chin, he played no league time, and as I said, he hasn't been involved at all. And you would have thought, I even thought, Marco, when the team was named, that he would have started, because he did have an influence the last day when he came on. And again,
big time.
He had a huge influence after coming on. But just, you know, there's probably that in between systems and plans as well for Wexford, and maybe coming out of the post Davy Fitz era and stuff. Just, I don't know. I'd say a little bit disappointed.
It was such a key game. I thought that Chin would actually start it, and he nearly rescued the game for them, because he scored 6 or 7 points in the second half. And if he'd been on from the start, he probably would have scored most of the frees. There was a couple of frees missed and stuff for that. So. But they have a bit of head scratching, because they had a very, very good league, but now they've only got 1 point and they've used up their 2 matches at home. So they're going to find it very, very difficult to qualify down the road. They'll be looking for other teams to do them favours to qualify.
Yeah. He's gone again there.
I think so, yeah.
In Leinster, Marco, I'm planning to head to Salt Hill for the weekend. So big game there. Henry versus Brian Cody the weekend, so 2 p.m. on Sunday. I've been looking forward to this one for quite a while. So
yeah, master against pupil in that one, TJ. It'll be a very strange occasion, I think, for Henry Shefflin. It won't be anything strange for Cody, because he's used to taking on the biggest and the best of them along the way. But I suppose for me, Shefflin being at home, I think a young manager carries that verve that he wants to win. He'd be a bit like the young bull and the old bull. I think I'd be given, even though I do think Kilkenny would probably win Leinster, I think Galway being at home, and it's Henry's, I suppose, first big game against Kilkenny, I think Galway might sneak it, TJ.
Yeah, look, Kilkenny have had a nice ease into the championship. They've had their couple of wins. They'll be happy with that. Galway have had a tough game in Wexford. They're at home. I suppose pressure is on, just to get a result. And I'd imagine for Henry, I'd say he'd just love to get one over on Cody, but as you said, not going to be easy, but definitely a good game. Marco, you think in the other big game, you think that you can get a result against Clare? I was going to ask yourself and Dalo, I'm assuming you will be staying with the heart and still loyal to your own county. And for me to call it and get off the fence, I was impressed enough with Clare forwards, but I think Cork will win actually the weekend. I think they might have a little bit to spare. I tip Cork to go through as the third team in Munster, and I'll stay with that for the moment. But as I said, you have to fix that the middle of that defence.
Yeah. I think no, TJ. I'm really hoping Cork win, because I want a situation where we have to go to Waterford, and I'd love to see us being on the front foot now with a championship win under the belt going into play Waterford if we could. Like, if we get beaten by Clare, you have to win your last 2 games then, and you have to go to Waterford to win. I still think we'll have to get results. That's the thing after the weekend. But Friday night at 9 o'clock now, TJ, I'll have a better indication of the result on Sunday. So I'll be sitting on the fence now until I see the team, and then I'll have a better indication.
I'll be on my way home from Punchestown. I will await your call. Punchestown starts tomorrow, guys. Great racing festival as well to look forward to. The other couple of things we have to touch on, Marco, first of all, is the fantasy. Good weekend for myself. I scored well, and I'm happy enough with the position I'm in now, because I changed my captain from Stephen Bennett on week one, and I went with TK. So you can see I'm up to third, and my weekly score was reasonably, I say it could be my first time ever, Larry, having the top weekly score with 283. And given what's coming next weekend, I have 2 players from Cork and I have 2 players from Clare. So I'm happy enough. So I'm putting myself within striking distance. I've kind of put a little bit distance between myself and yourself, so I'm happy enough there. But overall, there we have Larry struggling a little bit, like Tip, and in the overall, like, see, only 250, Larry, 434, so a little bit like that, and you'll see Owen Callaghan is tick up the rear in the celebrity rank or in the examiner one. Ross Kelly from Naas, I tip my hat to you, Ross. 338 points. Phenomenal.
That's some score. That's brilliant.
That is some score. I'd be doing well to get it in 2 weeks. And there's a buddy of mine there, John O'Connor, no longer the whipping boys of Munster. Another phenomenal score in 329. But you can see there, that's the type of pick. A couple of more of them there from Six Mile Bridge and a couple of lads from Partick's Well making up the top five. So great score, lads. And we're getting over 300 is just unbelievable. So, yeah, for the rest of us, work to do. But a long way to go. A long way to go. In relation to the Horse Racing Syndicate, Marco, we're nearly there. You'll be sending out emails this week to tie in with people. Practically there. We'll be tidying things up. So watch this space. So still room if you want to join. Yeah.
We've 460 members now. And the big question that a lot of the members are saying is, how do we join? How do we pay for this? Join? So
We're ready to go.
Give us a week. You'll have a link that you'll be able to join automatically. Anybody that has sent in an email, your membership has been accepted. So watch this space. Over the next 3 or 4 days, we'll be sending out a link for you. And you just click on the link and you join and you pay your membership. So really looking forward. And we have a horse going to Willie McCreary's. That's already a 3-year-old Gouda Fenn filly who's 6 months training done. So she'll be ready to rock pretty soon. And we have a second meeting with Jim Ballinger on Wednesday week, and we're hoping to tip into Willie Mullins's in the afternoon for the afternoon tea. So
lovely.
I know to Patrick, he's really looking forward to having us in the yard. So absolutely. All good, TJ.
All good. And I had the great pleasure of meeting the great Honeysuckle and the great Rachel Blackmore last Friday. So down in Henry's, great day out. So yeah, so watch this space for more. But that's it, guys, for the week. Yeah, Dalo, unfortunately, whether it is him, his Wi-Fi, or maybe he didn't want to get excited about Clare. So lots to look forward to. Two big games coming the weekend from myself and Marco. Over and out.
A grain of rice. Going to tip the scale. Just remember that,
lad. There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on,
Mayo. You've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
We're missing what the show is. Then we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.